Welcome back to a new episode of the Sportive Podcast, a new week, a new sports story to tell. And this time, I am taking you to Miami. Yes, and with the summer definitely behind us, it is a good reminder that there are some places that do not lack sunlight. In this episode, I am interviewing Darren Powell, the Director of Player Development at Inter Miami. Yes, that club that has introduced Messi to the MLS. Speaking with Darren, it was a great reminder for me and hopefully for you of the work that is done behind the scenes. It is more than an athlete kicking a ball on the pitch, but really it's about the whole organization. Obviously, a player development department is much needed. Darren shares about his post journey and obviously being a Brit, we talked about football and less about soccer, MLS and NWSL, Paris 2024. What future of football can we expect in 10 years in North America? Reminder, 2026 and 2028 are key dates in the US sports calendar. If you would like to connect with Darren, you can do so on LinkedIn. I'd like to dedicate this episode to my friend Alexis Chevret, who is trying to figure out at the tender age of 9 what discipline and vision means to become a professional athlete. Adventure Club, it is an agency based in Finland and with offices in several European cities, Turku, Helsinki, Berlin, Amsterdam and Paris. Adventure Club is about creating meaningful experiences and pitch-perfect design. It's all about business development, strategy, branding, or service design. The agency has worked with Tommy Hilfiger, Adidas, Zalando, L'Oreal, and Netflix. You, too, can join the club. Find the details on the show notes. Let me introduce you to our partner, Football for Football. This is a football resource that provides videos and information about football training, nutrition, equipment, and injuries. You know, let's take care of that injury that prevented us from becoming a pro. Sportive Podcast is on all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, Google, AfriPods. 1 million downloads per episode, so here's me asking for your help. Share, share, share. Sportive Podcast via Iboyi Studios is also on Patreon. If you want to support my podcast, find a link on the show notes. Until next time. Sportive Podcast is today in the US, in Miami. It looks like it's sunny out there. It's really gloomy here, but it's okay. But I'm speaking with a Brit, so he will understand that. He will understand the difference. Glad to have you here. Really, we're going to talk about lots of things in terms of sports. Really, someone who's on the field, who's taking care of the athletes, who's seeing the good and the bad of maybe good prep, bad prep. And there you go, Darren. Here's for you. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name's Darren Powell and currently the Director of Player Development at Inter Miami. Mm-hmm. First off, thank you very much for having me on the show and you're really right. Looking forward to it. And yes, Miami has palm trees and blue skies, which is a benefit of being in Miami for sure.
Absolutely.
But, you know, since my time in Miami, this is year 4 for me in Miami. And the whole time my title has been Director of Player Development, which has been, you know, basically looking to oversee the development of the top prospects within the organization, as well as, you know, some of my dual roles, if you like, have been academy director, you know, overseeing the academy in its infancy in 2020 and transitioning it from, you know, the staff have done a really good job of getting the players, but, you know, to organize and processes and so on and so forth when I first came in. Mm-hmm. Then that translated into working with the USL team, both as an assistant in year one and then as the head coach in year two and three. So basically the second team head coach. We played in different leagues, USL and MLS Next Pro. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the conclusion of last season, I was asked to join the first team staff, and so I was first team assistant under Coach Neville and Jason Christ with the first team. Mm-hmm. Up until this July when we had a new staff come in. And so since I've been then moved back into the original role of Director of Player Development. So it's been a fun experience. It's a great place to be. You know, from the development of the young players to the best player ever to play the game being here, it's been amazing.
Absolutely. And before I ask you the main question, because last time I teased you and saying I'll ask you for sure at the beginning of the interview, but to be honest with you, I think my first question for me is, as a Brit, as a European, what is the main difference between the MLS, the Premier League / I'll say European, you know?
Yeah, again, I think I came to the US in 1991. I was an apprentice player in England, and one of the coaches emigrated and brought me to the US college system. And at the time, there was no MLS. There was a starting of the USL that was starting to have full-time players, but more of a seasonal league where it was only about 6.5 months long. So, I think the biggest difference is the US is still in its infancy of growing, but growing at such a fast rate. It will challenge the top 10 leagues in the world. But the growth has been amazing over a short space of time. And I know I've been here 30 years, and that's not a short space of time. It feels that way, but
It is.
it compared to the European leagues, are 100 years old. So, I think it's the growth in the US compared to the Europe has been immense and very quick. Now, it's very difficult to always compare teams and leagues,
Sure.
because a Miami team playing February in the European League away at any you name the team, everyone says Stoke, but a away game in February is certainly different from even an English team coming over and playing away in Miami in July. There's so many factors that go into it. The comparisons have to be kept really careful, but at the same time, the level of play in this country and the growth of the game in the US, I think it has been tremendous, and that coincides with the World Cup coming in 26, and more money then coming into the game will continue to grow in
Absolutely.
this country, as is the Premier League or La Liga. They've all grown from TV money over the years, so everything moves, nothing stands still. I think that is the biggest key. Nothing stands still, everything keeps moving forward, and I think we can all contribute to the game in our own way and influence the game in our own wherever you are, you can influence the game and continue with that growth. And I think that's the most important thing. Nothing stands still, things
Oh,
move
for sure.
forward, and as a coach you have to adapt to that.
It's really interesting that you talked about the World Cup. That was my next question, I guess, to say like how do you celebrate that? Because it is coming on your continent, it's coming with, I mean, all the eyes of the world literally coming for like a month. Obviously Miami, maybe because it's sunny, people are willing to play all day all year long, I guess, more or less. How do you celebrate? How do you even for yourself or even with a team, how do you see that those opportunities coming in and saying we have to be, we have to be good, or we have to grow. We have to, because it's 2.5 years away. Basically, it's just nearby.
Yeah, I think, look, I read something. The US has a great infrastructure, and so does Canada, and obviously the Mexican leagues has a great infrastructure. So, unlike a lot of World Cups and host nations having to build the actual stadiums and the facilities are here. So I think the most exciting thing is, because the emphasis is not making sure the stadium's on time. Yes, things have to be updated. Yes, things have to be to the FIFA standards. But most of that infrastructure is in place within the three hosts. So for me, looking at it's the excitement and the joy it can bring. I think US soccer's in a great place. There's a lot of good people working at all the different levels. So what I think it is you want it to bring joy to the masses. And that is an opportunity that I think the USA in particular has. Canada probably on the back of the last World Cup, and Mexico is bringing joy to the home nation. So that's where in lies the pressure of making sure you have the right players at the right time and the right frame of mind with the right health. The US has me for Coach Greg Berhalter, it's a very difficult scenario where the MLS season runs from sort of February through the summer, and the off season is sort of December, whereas the European leagues, the World Cup comes on the back of their season. So meshing those players is going to be the challenge for the coaching staff of the USA. And the pressure is, it's an opportunity now to get the whole nation non-soccer fans, even more non-soccer fans, excited about their country. So the further they can advance within the tournament, that excitement grows, as we all know, in any country. You know, you see that. But this is the opportunity for the US, which I think previously, yes, it was there, but it was in the soccer community. This World Cup now can appeal to basketball fans, to hockey fans, to American football fans. I think that's the opportunity we have within our sport in this country now. And it's a big responsibility, but one that, and I think it's the same in Canada, but and Mexico's agenda is slightly different, but again, it's the same for their population. It's really important the hosts do well. And, you know, I think it's a massive opportunity to expand the game in the United States again by not just the soccer people getting behind behind the team and excited, but getting the population behind it.
That's a really, really great outlook of it. I would like to ask you then, do you think the World Cup may have come to, you know, this area because the Americans know about the entertainment, to really know how to entertain people on a sports field? Do you think it's one of the main, maybe those main reasons that, you know, let us use
that? Yeah, I think the growth, I think it's just part of the growth, right? I mean, look, you go to a game in England, or, you know, I've been to obviously several games in England from my growing up, and then you go to America. You know, the product on the field is massively important, but the crowds are different. You know, the crowds are there, but in the US now, you know, we have wonderful fans in Miami. They sing and chant the whole game, and it's and it's for the spontaneous response to the action in the game. But also we also have fans in Miami that, you know, it's a great place to be. You know, the entertainment, the food choice is just amazing. that you have, so that's part of the culture. So, you know, young families are there, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think what's happening is before the crowds in a lot of the MLS teams were, you know, it was purely entertainment based. There is really good fan groups, and that culture is growing. So it is related spontaneous to the action. And, you know, the US for me, like the games and how they treat people and how, you know, fan experience is massively important. And you can get several fan experiences that are at different levels now within the US in terms of, you know, the family entertainment, the crowd, the singing, the chanting, the tailgating. There's so many great options. And, you know, I think that's really should be appealing for fans all over the world that come to the World Cup and embrace that opportunity. And I think we really enjoy the games and really enjoy the culture.
I mean, I guess for the first time we can say America, the US is becoming the place for football, real football. Because it's a matter of, in my case, I guess, it's a matter of culture. I would like you to take us when, you know, you start your career. You spoke obviously about academies, and for me here, I understand that US colleges have their own system as well, and do know that. Then again, it's more like a compare contrast because it's not the same. The cultures are different. But for you, what was your, you know, growth in that space?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's a great question, but it might take me 30, 40 minutes to answer, but I'll try and be as brief as I can. But a really good question. Look, my experiences, you know, I started growing as a young kid watching my dad play on the sideline of amateur football and watching him running up and down the sideline playing with my brother, and then going to watch and support Nottingham Forest. And then as the evolution, I was scouted, was an academy player in the Forest system, which is your dream. And, you know, to represent your hometown team was massive. And working within the academy with a group of guys from the same city trying to play for your hometown club is an amazing experience. And one that, you know, later in my career wasn't here, wasn't the pathway in the States. It now is, which is again something I'm very passionate about. But having lived that experience, but also being released, being told at 16, you're not the player for us, and what that does to you when your dream gets crushed, and you know you have these moments where, okay, how are you going to respond? Well, for me, it was like, let's go again and give it a best somewhere else. And certainly did that, and then played at Notts County, which then opened the opportunity to come to the United States, because had I not gone to Knox County, and we had a successful youth team, everyone went on to be pro. I was able to earn professional contracts in the States, but everyone went on to be a professional player. So that time of life was really good education of being into full-time football from 16 to 18. Mm-hmm. And then we were competing in the Youth Cup semi-finals, and we had a tremendous amount of success with that group. But had I not gone to Notts County, I wouldn't have met a gentleman by the name of Pat Barrett, who emigrated to the States, and I was one of his recruits. He took to the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. I was not aware of the college system as an 18-year-old Englishman, but you know, he said, "This is a wonderful option. I'd love for you to come with me." I ended up doing it, you know, and I came to the States. You know, now there's a lot more players and pathways from players all over the world, Spanish, French, English, are doing it more often. But when I came, that wasn't the case.
Wow.
There was no email, for example. There was no FaceTime. There was no text messages. It was totally different, you know, waiting to call my parents on a Sunday, just saving up my quarters from the week. That's what it was, you know. And so those opportunities were amazing. To see and then grow in the college game, understand the college system, the strengths of the college system and the weaknesses, but you can make those weaknesses strengths if you apply yourself correctly. And then obviously all that background of playing is then, you know, coaching became a passion. So that background, all those experiences led for me, you know, understanding what pathways are, trying to create pathways. In the US, players were being pulled in several different directions at the time frame of the late 90s and early 2000. So there wasn't a clear pathway. Okay, you're an international U12, next year you want to be a U13, next year you want to be a U14. That didn't exist. And obviously Inter Miami's academy is only 4 years. So that pathway has only been in Miami for 4 years. You know, so creating those pathways, understanding that was important in my coaching career. So the college system is great. And you know, that was a pathway for young players, but it's not to one college, it was to 200, 300 colleges, you know. There's opportunities for you to play out there. So just having the players understand what's the clear pathway, these are your goals. That's how I started out as a young coach in this country. You know, rather than, you know, the player felt he pulled in five different directions, he doesn't want to let anybody down. Now he's playing too much soccer and it becomes detrimental because he's getting hurt and now can't perform and people wonder why. So it's just trying to create that pathway. And it's never linear. No one's ever going to go like this. It's all over the place for a player. And the ups and downs are amazing, but then help players understand what those ups and downs are about. And even when you're not in a great moment, and you know, how do you get out of that? What are the actions and behaviours you need to get out of that? Mm. So I think, I told you it was a long answer, but from my playing experiences, my playing experiences lead me into coaching, into a belief that, you know, in a country that didn't have that, and then starting to help with that. Now, there's not one person that is, you know, able to make that much change, but a lot of people can. If you can make change in your own environment, so if you're a coach, your own environment, you can help and control now, you know. You've got to keep chipping away, and what the things that you control with players is, okay, when you're here, this is what we expect. This is you know, what we expect to see from you in training today, and you know, at the games at the weekend, and just keep influencing your environment as best you can, and then hopefully players will evolve, and you know, that's kind of the experiences I've had throughout my career.
That's really amazing. What I'm hearing, I'm really loving it because it resonates with me or my background. As a head coach, I would like to ask you, what type of leadership do you use, or who are you in, you know, in those spaces? Because sometimes you can say everything when it's all good, you know, but the play is so good, you know, it must be him that, you know, him or her that brought the team up. But when anything is falling down, it really is all about the coach. And I'm always amazed to see how sometimes it can go right, but you still have a coach that really engages with the players, engages with the team. And I'm still amazed that not everybody can do that, to be honest, but I guess it depends on the egos or whatever. But I would like to hear from your experience, what was it like to be in a US college, to know that tomorrow you could be fired, or you could be sent somewhere else?
Yeah, no, I think, look, I've coached, just for the listeners, I've coached at Division One, Division Three college, Division One college as head coach. I've coached as a head coach in the professional leagues over here, the academy system and the professional leagues, from the USL Championship with San Antonio, USL One with Fort Lauderdale, which was into Miami's second team, and then in the MLS Next Pro, all as a head coach, and then as an assistant coach at the first team level. So, you know, the biggest thing about coaching, I think, is the environment that you can control. So, you know, everybody has different resources, different constraints placed on them. So a lot of that as a coach, sometimes you don't control. So it's important you control the environment. So, for example, you know, people in that environment are the players. They are the technical staff, the coaches. They are the support staff, the trainer, the, you know, the high performance coach.
Yeah.
Parents, agents, fans that are all influential in those areas. And as a head coach, you have to lead that space. Obviously, the directors, sporting directors, owners, you know, you have to lead that space. So with all that in place, I think it's important that you make that environment, you have some non-negotiables within that environment. Non-negotiables for players, non-negotiables for the staff. So for players, we expect you to, for example, play with intensity, you know, work hard both sides of the ball. Whatever you decide those are, you put them in place for the players. Same with the staff. And then the staff is making sure good communication lines are there, because within the good communication line, then everybody is now delivering the same message to the players. And the players are the most important. So that's what the coach controls. With the daily sort of schedule, with the training, the sessions need to be about the players, for the players, about the players, helping those players get better and grow. And that for me is at any level, because then the performances at the weekend will improve. Everybody's there together looking to get better. And, you know, depending on the role, if you've got to get 3 points at the weekend, the pro level or the college level, that's okay, but you still develop, still help players get better. So it's that teaching part, I think, is important. I think leading the group is important, but you're setting the culture, what you want to see. You have to live that yourself, but you also need to influence, you know, the people around you, you know, to help them get better, help them create that environment. And then really within that, what are those actions and behaviors to look like?
Oh, wow. Amazing. And in this new position of yours, I'll have to ask you the first question just to bust the bubble. What is it feels like to work with Messi or to work alongside Messi?
Well, I'm in the same building. I wouldn't say I'm working directly with Messi, which would have been a great opportunity to maybe have done so. But he, you know, just watching him from afar, amazing. I can't, you know, it's not by accident that you're that good. I mean, I always give the example. I remember watching him score the free kick in his first game, and he's the first one at training. And when I say first one at training, the next day, the video's gone viral. It's gone all around the world.
Wow.
And the first player in training, you know, the players probably got home after midnight, and training's early in the morning, the recovery, and he's there doing his recovery bits and everything. You know, he's the first guy there at 7:15 in the morning. And to me, that speaks volumes. And actually Busquets was a couple of minutes after him. And, you know, when the young players that I'm pretty close with walk in the building and see that these players are already there, you don't have to say anything. You know, it's just those messages that he's able to deliver without speaking, just by his actions. And again, you know, the night before, you know, his free kick's gone global, amazing moment, influenced the game, amazing, which he does every time he steps on the field. But it's the bits people don't see, where he's able to have influence on players, and for me, I'm just amazed just watching him from afar, and how he acts and how humble he is. You know, really resonates with me, and something that I'll take with me, you know, in my coaching career to help players, because if the best player in the world, that's how he is, and that's the standard that you've got to get to.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's the standard. I guess he's worth every penny then. What is your job then? What does your date look like? You know, because when you say player development, it could be everything.
Yeah, no. Hmm? So that's changed over time. You know, currently it's slightly different to when I first came in. But right now it's just obviously making sure you're familiar with the player pools within the academy. So in particular, the 17s and U19s, looking at the players that are coming through, who are our top prospects, and then what are their, you know, what are their plans for these? What's their pathway look like? You know, if you're a left back on the U17s, you know, who's a left back on the second team? How do we get you there via the 19s, so on and so forth? So you look at player pathways. Also, just working with the coaches. The coaches in the academy are fantastic. Mm-hmm. First team coaches, well, everybody in the club, the coaches are really open and fantastic to work with. So the connection right now is really with the second team and the academy coaches and just helping them and supporting them in anything that they need currently. And then, but obviously with the ultimate goal, looking at the next group, we've had a really good group of players come through, you know, from the academy to MLS 2 to the first team in the last couple of seasons. But now how can we influence the next group of players that does that? And just keeping my eye on that to the day-to-day and reporting that back to the sporting director.
I'm going to ask you maybe a silly question, but it was, I think it's something that I've really discovered and I realized throughout time when I lived in Lyon. So Lyon is known in France for having one of the best academy, if not 100%. The best in France.
Yes.
And I'm always wonder why you have to train. You spent all these years, you know, engaging with a player, with a client at some point, just to let them go after 3 or 4 years. But the city of Lyon is never able, well, at that time it was able, but now there's an upset downs basically, but it's been a while since Lyon has won anything, but it's still known to have the best, you know, academy.
Yeah.
And I wonder how can we use those kids, keep them here? Of course, there's a financial side of it. I do understand that. But like to keep a level of discipline that is no longer seen on the pitch by the pros, right? There's some kind of discrepancies that I kind of see in different cities where I'm like, I'm still wondering why it does happen. For you, what does that mean to have maybe, imagine if you have 3 or 4 messes in your academy and you do know that they're great, but you have to let them go. That's one thing. But if you keep them and then, you know, through training or through whatever, experience at the club, they're not doing well. How do you manage all that stress? You know, as you said, the agent, the family, the fans, blah, blah, blah. The opportunities, it's kind of lost on me.
Yeah, I think it becomes down to the individual, right? Because each individual has dreams, aspirations. And, you know, and then the club, you know, is a business. It is a business, a professional sport. So I think you have to have those conversations. So, you know, a player that's grown up in Lyon's academy then maybe has a value that, you know, again, and he has an aspiration to maybe win the Champions League, you know, because Lyon's a very good club in, you know, in every aspect, in my opinion. So, but, you know, you know that your man may want to win a Champions League, so that might not be afforded to Lyon because of the budgets that they have. So, okay, in order for them to maybe get the budgets to have a Champions League player or the next one, the next homegrown may want to stay, they have to capitalize on that moment where they can get 20, 30, 40 million that then comes back into the system that may be able to keep the next one. But again, if that player has like these aspirations and it's not being offered, then again, that cycle keeps repeating. But I think the initial phase of a player's development to grow up in his hometown academy and make a debut for the first team is a really special moment. And I think it's a special opportunity that's afforded. And Lyon's done a fantastic job within their academy. And it's something we aspire to be in Miami. You know, my last game with the first team as an assistant coach came in DC United. And we had 6 players under the age of 19 that were all played in our academy. And it was a special moment. And, you know, when I reflect back on that moment, it's probably one of the most special moments in the career that we managed to draw 2-2 with. I think Ben Karashi got his first goal for the club and Noah Allen on the same night that both came through the academy. So it was a really special moment. to see that. But again, you know, their journeys, all six of them, will be slightly different, and they've all got slightly. I mean, having know the boys, they've all got aspirations and are determined, but they love Miami, and they'll always love Miami because it's in their DNA. So wherever their careers take them, up, down, sideways, all over, but you know, these guys will. These guys are going to have a special time ahead, and they'll always have Miami in them. And the Leon boys will always have Leon in them.
That's true. There's one who left for Paris. Didn't go well with him with his first game, but I mean, at the stadium, but he was okay. When it comes to the academies, I wonder how much energy or how much investment, be it financial, be it work-wise, I guess, does it take to really follow, to be honest with you, teenagers? Because you're 16, you're 17, you're still teenagers. You know, you try to teach them to be professionals, but at the same time, you know, don't play the PlayStation for the whole night, basically, and just go home by 12 or whatever. What is that much of, how do you, take the energy and try to really push a good narrative, a good discipline with those kids? Men, women, I mean,
I think, look, you look at it as a holistic approach. So with that, there's the family piece, there's a school piece, and there's a football piece. We're only with the players, you know, 6 to 8 hours a week within the academy environment. So if you just do 6 to 8 hours a week, you know, in terms of that development of a person, you have an influence in that time, and it's a very strong influence. So again, you're influencing the good lessons of leadership, of character development, of good citizenship. They're all very important, and they're connected then to your soccer development of the player. But the development continues from school. You know, how you are as a person is massive. I think being a good person is the most important thing. You know, my son and my daughter have gone through football themselves, but I always tell them being a good person and being a good teammate is massively important. And you can teach that within your environment as a coach. And then they need more. They need to watch the game more. They may have to do a bit more conditioning. They may have to do a bit more, things for improving their body structure in terms of movements, in terms of strength training, just depending on the age. But that being a good person, you know, with the contact hours within the academy is massively important. And you know, I think, you know, it doesn't stop. It becomes a lifestyle for these players to make it to the top level. And you know, even being on FIFA, believe it or not, these kids are learning some things about soccer, which is amazing to me.
True.
So as a coach, you have to adapt. And, you know, the biggest thing for me as a coach over the years has been that adaptation. You know, when for me, the game's the same from a 12-year-old to a first team, but it's how you explain those messaging. The messaging is not the same. It's almost, it's Disney 11 for a 12-year-old. It's at Disney level. And, you know, it's an 18-year-old's movie a little higher up that chain. But it's just how you adapt. And I think the most important thing as a coach, you look at controlling those environments and make sure you're developing the culture that you want. And it's about the players and developing good people. And, you know, the holistic approach is massive.
That's pretty awesome. And you just talked about your daughter, and it's a great segue to the women's sports. And obviously being in the US, the women's team, although they lost this year because I was so happy, they just won a lot of stars, Women World Cup.
Yes.
I was a bit tired of that. But when you get to see the difference in how the development of the sports really happened in the US, as a father, I guess, as a football players person, what do you like to see in the US in the sports industry? I mean, if your daughter works,
I think it's opportunity. Yeah, I think it's the opportunities for girls and women in sports over here in the US is fantastic. They have opportunity. My daughter at the age of 5 could go and join soccer teams. She has a path to college, you know, she chose the path to go to NC State. She had lots of opportunities and chose NC State University in North Carolina. But lots of young girls have that. So there is a clear pathway more through the college sports and then to the pros, which was how soccer was in particular as a sport, and traditional American sports like American football, basketball, that's the pathways that these guys take to get to the top. And that's the same within the women's sports now. So the opportunities are massive. As a father, to see my daughter just happy and smile is the most important thing. And through the challenges of sports and seeing the ups and downs that you go through, you know, seeing her open emails when she's been invited to national camp, you know, as a 13, 14 year old, it makes you super proud. And now seeing her pathway to of growth and what it's taught her as a person, and perseverance and not giving up and just working as hard as possible to achieve your goals and dreams. And, you know, her dream was to be a professional player, and she's got the opportunity now. She's playing in the Scottish Premier League. The journey takes us all in different directions, and she's living a fullest life now as a professional player, which was her dream. And, as a father, that's what makes you super happy. And same with my son. You know, he's recently made his college debut at Division One level, and he was super, super proud of that. So, you know, as a father, that's these opportunities are there in women's sports. That's what that's what they have through the, especially through the college system, which provides an education that then goes back to the holistic approach. And you know, it's amazing to see your own children do that, and I know me and my wife are super proud of both of them.
Absolutely. And for someone who's living in Europe, who don't know, as a father or a parent who don't know much about the US system, would you ask them or tell them to kind of look into the US system, to kind of follow the path of, you know, the scholarships and everything? Opportunities are there.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunities are amazing with all sports, from you know, from rowing to basketball to volleyball to tennis. They're there. It's an amazing pathway if you can get there. I think the misconception is easy to do. No, you have to be a top athlete to get those opportunities. And, you know, there's so many American colleges, so many different, it's so competitive.
Yeah.
And it's very global now. You know, the world is getting a smaller place. Yeah. So now people can find out more. The coaches are trying to find the next best player, and that may be a tennis player in the south of France. It could be somebody in Belgium. Absolutely. There's all these different sports. So that's the hard piece to navigate, and there's so many different routes. But if I'm a parent, and I would certainly look at the US system, it is not perfect. But if you can get some of your education partially funded, and you're prepared to you know, subsidize some of that education as well, ultimately you get a degree, and it coincides with playing the sport you love at a full-time basis. And that's what it does. It's competitive. It's treated like young professionals in all the sports. You know, that's what you do in terms of, you know, you travel very well into hotels and get to explore the country. So there's so many benefits of being part of that system. But again, it's not easy. It's not you sign up and you can do it. No, you have to earn it from from your sporting talents and the work that you do and the competition that you do. And you will, there's moments that you're going to suffer. You have those ups and downs all the time that, you know, again, it's not this linear road. So I don't want to put it where everyone can do it, because that's not the case. But if you're talented and have opportunities, you know, my case, I wasn't good enough to be a top professional player in Europe, and was released from a club at 16. And then, you know, at 18 was at that next junction in my career. And this was an opportunity that came up, and it was not a pathway that was well-trodden. It's a lot more well-trodden now. So I would encourage people to look at it, and, you know, the opportunities that presented for me over the years were very fortunate and very grateful for, and the support I had from, you know, from my family and parents, and in particular in those early stages was massive. And you know, you know, again, the world's a smaller place, more opportunities present themselves, and it can be a lot, it's a lot of fun. So I would, yes, definitely look at it, but there is navigate it. You need navigate it with good advice.
Yeah, that's for sure. I have a couple of friends who actually went to the US with a tennis scholarship. So it's one of those things where for people, really, I realize that for people who live in France or in Europe, they don't know about that. And you're like, please look into that because, I mean, you know, you have a great degree afterwards. Before I let you go, I'll just have to ask you, what are the challenges that you go through as, you know, as a development player at the moment where you have to say, okay, is it the weather? I don't know. Is it the conditions, maybe the staff that's changing over time or changing all the time? I don't know. Like, what are the things where you can say, ah, this is my...
No, the big challenges is, you know, again, it's kind of the timing of, you know, players developing. So, for example, every player is different. So I think the biggest challenge is you have a team and you have 16 players that are on different pathways, even though it's the ultimate one is, okay, let's go to the MLS. Mm-hmm. But how do I get there? Well, player A is going to go and go to the MLS 2 and then go to the first team. Player B is going to go MLS 2, but then go to college and then come back to MLS 2 and then might get there. So the challenge is kind of understanding and predicting that, because I don't think one person or one coach can say, you know, verbatim, this is going to happen. No, we can predict the best and try and put those players on the correct pathway. Are we always right? No, is nobody 100% right? But, you know, it's explaining that to young players to understand, because they all see just going to the first team. So the challenge is, okay, there's different ways to get there.
Yeah.
And it's not just, again, it's not one person. It's not the director of player development. It's not the U17 coach. It's not the U9. It needs to be that collective to help them and give them the best advice. And then as a player, it's explaining that it's okay to have a different pathway. But what you have to understand as a young player is you are responsible for your development. So you don't like the answer where you are currently right now. Okay, everybody's working hard. It's how do you close the gap so you can get to where you want to get to? What extra do you need to do to close that gap? If everyone works at the same, the gap stays the same. So how do you close that gap? And it's just teaching players to understand that, because they see it as an individual. I'm working hard, I'm doing it. Yeah, I get that. But it's okay, we need to close the gap. And what does that look like? That can be a technical gap, it can be a tactical gap, it can be a physical gap, it can be a mentality gap. So what does that gap look like, and, you know, how can we close it, not just get better at that ourselves for each player? And then the understanding that as a coach, you've got 16 different pathways that you're responsible for, and each of those will be different, and you can just advise and guide the best you can.
I like the fact that you talked about the mental gap. I would like to ask you, do you have experts who follow the kids, who follow you, the players, and, you know?
In programs before, yes. We don't have anybody. We have we have somebody that works with the whole club, but then he's spread over the first team right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's an area of development that we'll have within the next couple of years as roles expand. You know, just a little bit of history, like when MLS academies began with all the MLS teams, the coach was everything. He was recruiting everything. Now the scouting department, so it just grows. I think this is a phase that's going to grow in sports psychology as well. I think that will grow within the academies fairly soon, and some are already doing it. So some of I know Philadelphia Union, for example, they have a full-time psychologist, which helps with the players and helps with the coaches, which I think is massive. Into Miami, we don't necessarily have that right now, but it's very important, and the coaches help. And what the coaches look for is just that competitive streaks and understanding that emotional intelligence within a game and within a sport, you know, and they're helping advise. Are they expert in sports psychology? No, but you're picking up on the cues from the players to help guide them the right way. And I think that's important. But the mentality is massive, because you will suffer at times. You will, you know, everyone enjoys the ups. Everybody smiles in that moment. But, you know, it's the times that are here to test us. That really, really are true. You know, a lot of people's true character comes out. And that's how we can help and guide the player again. Another coaching moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just cite the Bible that says, rejoice in tough times. And you're like, easy to do. I'll have to ask you about that time. Do you use sports technology within the company, within the team? How do you use it? How do you translate it to the players or to the kids?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're not unified in the academy. That's where each coach uses his own set of skill sets to do that. But some of the skill sets that we use of video and obviously clips.
Sure.
The players now are so quick to use a phone that they can even clip themselves. so it becomes very important, you know.
Yeah.
These things are happening all the time in terms of real time. What you know, the individual clips. You know, there's coaches do that. The annotations, the movement. You know, each player learns different ways, so you can teach them different ways. You can teach them by obviously talking, you know, now by seeing themselves as well is a really useful tool. So, all very, very good, and all the coaches are using that.
Do you use like wearables or something like that, like a
Uber? Yeah, they have the GPS units. We get all the physical data as well, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's housed within the high performance department here. And we have that from U15s all the way through to the first team.
Which is pretty awesome. So what is your next step then? Like if you were to look at your professional career in 2026, you know, before the World Cup, what do you see yourself in 2 to 3 years? How do you see yourself evolving in your space or maybe growing or being, I don't know, dare I say a head coach of a team somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, all of the above. I think, you know, I hopefully maybe I'll grow up next year. You know, it's, I always joke saying that. I just enjoy working with good people on good projects.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been certainly fortunate to have that follow me throughout my career and working, seeing the success of you know, former assistant coaches, former, like school counsellors and trainers. It's been an amazing experience, and just continue to do that. Find what the next best project is, and help players and staff continue to improve. So where that ends up being and what that role is that a sporting director, is that a head coach, is that an academy director, director of coaching, what all that kind of entails, I can't predict.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can guarantee is I just, again, continue to enjoy the journey and working with players and staff and helping develop people to be the best version of themselves.
And because you're from Britain, I'll have to ask you this silly question to end on a smiley note, I guess. Wrexham, do we need to do some investments in those small villages in France, in the UK, to wake up maybe a community, to wake up an interest in something that is much more than football/soccer.
Great.
Do you love that?
It's been a great show. I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's living a dream, right? And trying to take them. And it's amazing for what it's done to Wrexham. Mm. You know, not everybody's going to have the celebrity status of an ownership group, but, you know, an ownership group can certainly have an influence. And I think this, you know, Wrexham is... people like to invest in sports and in communities and leave legacies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think the US has the most billionaires in the world per person, whatever the stat is. But and people like to leave legacies, so they will look at investing. And, you know, it's getting those connections. There's always kind of some connection somewhere along the line. So if that in a French village, that maybe from some beautiful wine or some, you know, the wonderful cheese or, you know, from something really that maybe the connection with those ownership groups, but whatever that connection can be in England, in France, in Spain, you know, there's certainly people looking to invest. And I think it's, you know, again, the Wrexham thing and seeing that, how it impacts the community can happen, you know, in other communities for sure elsewhere. And, you know, just that whole community getting behind soccer is always something, you know, you grow up with and you like to see, and it goes back to, you know, the young player wanting to represent their hometown team. And when that hometown team has that platform, then, you know, where does that take you? And it's an amazing story.
For sure. I mean, I'll just have to let you go and do your life. But I love this this conversation for many reasons. But some of them I'll tell you off the record, because it will take the whole day. But I would like to just share it, that the fact that I really like your philosophy, maybe your poise when you talk about the system. Obviously, not everything is, you know, easy peasy. But I like the fact that you take care of people. And that's for me. It's what sports is all about. If we take care of ourselves and take care of everybody around us, it's more than a game, it's more than business. And that's one thing really that speaks to me. And hopefully, who knows, maybe in 2 years we'll be the sporting director, or maybe if you want to say Miami, nobody will will understand. Maybe not send you to Milwaukee will be a little bit tough. And maybe you can be someone who can come to the US team, US men's or women's team.
No, I mean, look, I think anything's possible, and look, I would never have dreamed as a 15-year-old that I'd be in the position I am today.
So
for me, it's just continue the journey where it takes, and do it with good people is massively important, and try and do it with a smile on your face, and go again.
Indeed. Atlas will be following you for sure. And for those who are listening, obviously, I'll link everything on the podcast, because you are on LinkedIn. And of course, that's where I find you. So those are the good things. I'll let you enjoy the sun. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.